ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Welcome back to ISKCON of Silicon Valley. We're very happy to have the opportunity to come together with everyone here, both in the live studio audience and also those of you who are checking in from various places around the world online. Our main purpose here at ISKCON of Silicon Valley is to follow in the footsteps of our acharya, means the teacher who's guiding the organization through his directions, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is seated on this Vyasasana, or the seat which represents Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Krishna, who wrote down the Vedas and made them available for the world for everyone's guidance. And the main process of bhakti, devotional service, is to keep the transcendental vibration going in our lives. And it helps to have a central place for us to meet, to practice bhakti, to see others who are practicing it, and in a very concentrated way. Also to learn new ways to organize our lives so that we can be on track. There are many instructions that are given by the previous teachers. And of course, they're very kind to us, so they give us summary versions of these teachings also. And by coming together for association, we can find the strength to follow these instructions and adapt them to our particular schedules and lifestyles. And we'll feel progress in our lives by doing that. Especially the chanting of mantras, very specifically the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, is important for those who would like to advance in devotional service, because yoga is based on training the mind. It's also on protecting ourselves from the lower modes of nature, especially Rajogun and Tamogun, or those two specifically, and fixing ourselves in a practice of devotional service. So protection, training, and fixity. These three are very important for any discipline to make progress, but very specifically in devotional service. So we'll talk about that today. And also, we invite anybody who's listening online or anybody who's joined us here to join our mantra meditation club. We have a mantra meditation club here at ISV. And today, there'll be a place out in the parking lot. There'll be a special tent erected where there'll be some teachers of mantra meditation who'll be showing how to chant and also giving encouragement how to join the club. We'll also have regular times at which we'll be meeting here at the temple and elsewhere for what we call mantra meditation circles, so we can sit together and chant, because sometimes it helps when there are others around to chant. It encourages us when there's somebody sitting across from us, rather than just alone with our minds. It can give a little bit of momentum and encouragement. And that'll be just out the door on your left-hand side. You'll see the tent in a little while erected out there for anybody who wants to go and check it out. There'll be timings when you can take some instruction in mantra meditation and so forth. And online, if you're interested, you can write in, and our mantra meditation teachers will take your names and numbers and get in touch with you remotely, tell you how to join. And then also kirtan. If one stays in contact with kirtan, or the singing of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and music is uncanny in the sense that in therapy, oftentimes children who are autistic, or people who have lost their memory even due to head injuries or trauma of other kinds and have amnesia, are known to find solace and also healing through music. What to speak of transcendental music? So in the material world, we understand that we have amnesia. This is commonly known as ignorance or avidya. I've forgotten my real nature, which is similar in amnesia cases where someone might come from a particular family and live in a particular town, but due to some trauma, they forget who they are and where they come from. So I've also forgotten that. That's why oftentimes when we begin with any spiritual practice, we first offer a prayer which begins, Om Jnana Timirandasya, Jnana Jana Shalakaya, that I was born not knowing where I am. I don't know who I am or where I came from. So the musical performance of the mantra is very likely to revive, or is sure to revive, our memory of who we are. This is kind of a therapy that anyone can take up. The singing of the mantra to music and rhythm. There are many students here today learning more about the rhythms that go with the chanting, right? So we'll try some of that today and see if it revives our memory and our enthusiasm. So we'll chant. We'll also mention once or twice about the Mantra Meditation Club. And we can also discuss today about these three topics: how to protect oneself from the influence of lower modes. So best offense is a good defense sometimes. And also how to practice, because practice is necessary to advance in any discipline. And then how to come to a level of being fixed. And also, what are some of the symptoms we can look for when we are becoming fixed? You can see in yourself that you're becoming fixed when you'll notice some of these symptoms that we'll discuss. Does that sound like an okay plan? Okay.
In the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, Krishna, in the 43rd verse, talks about who we are as a mixture of the matter and spirit. This is important knowledge to have, because the main mistake that one can make when affected by the lower modes of nature, especially Rajagun and Tamagun, is to identify with the gross and subtle material bodies and think them to be ourselves. This is the first lesson that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, is that we are not these bodies, but we're actually spiritual beings who survive the body even when this body is no longer useful. And machines do wear out. We have a lot of experience of that in our own lives. Things have a beginning and an end that are materially created. In fact, anything that's created will have an ending. But interestingly, the essence of who we are is never created, because we've always existed and we always will exist. This is a first step in spiritual knowledge, and it can't be skipped over or neglected. And one who has a clear idea that I'm not the body will interact with the world and its various circumstances differently from one who thinks that I am my body and I am my mind. So in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, actually look at, what are you looking at now? 43, please. Krishna says that we should have a clear knowledge. His translation is his words: thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So let's read it together. Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. And I'll read the purport for you.
This third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directive to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire, for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind. By steady intelligence directed toward one's pure identity. This is the sum total of this chapter. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculations and artificial attempts to control the senses by the so-called practice of yogic postures can never help a man towards spiritual life. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. So, first of all, we hear deliberate spiritual intelligence again. This is something that we have the power to do, is to deliberate on what our situation is and then to change our activities by taking higher guidance. And this is what Krishna recommends in this verse and in the chapter itself. And very particularly, he mentions that we have to protect ourselves from the lower modes of material nature, because the three gunas or qualities Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita later on as being like ropes that tie us up, and they're very strong. In fact, he says there's only one way to get out of them, and that is to surrender to Krishna, to submit to Krishna's direction, and to give oneself to Krishna properly. This is a proper alignment for the living being, to work under Krishna's direction. Just as Arjuna decides finally to work under Krishna's direction by the end of Bhagavad Gita, he says, I accept whatever you've said, and now I'll act according to your instructions. This is proper alignment, and it gives protection. When I work by my own intelligence, which isn't guided by Krishna and the spiritual master who represents Krishna, because spiritual master is like an attorney who knows the law and can bring out the relevant instructions from Krishna to guide one in practical circumstances through one's life. If one takes such instruction, then one can be properly guided through the various whirlpools of life. And this is a kind of protection. One's intelligence is protected, and there's a lifestyle also through which one can protect oneself, which Krishna recommends throughout the Bhagavad Gita, when he talks about how to live in such a way that we don't expose ourselves to lower modes of material nature. And he gives a general clue there, urdvam gacchati sattvasta madhyam tishtant. Rajasa? Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta. So first of all, he says, if you're in sattva, that you go upward. You're elevated by this mode of nature. Madhyam tishtanti rajasa. So in the middle mode of raja, there's a way in which we stay within the fray of the material world, where there's a struggle for existence. Jaganya guna vrittista adoga chanti tamasa. So then he refers to even lower energies, like the mode of ignorance, as being jaganya, abominable. Jaganya guna vrittista adoga chanti tamasa. So gachanti means to go. And from tamasa, or the lowest mode of nature, which has its own force and grabbing power, we're pulled downward, and greater suffering awaits those who are pulled downward.
These three modes of material nature are constantly mixing, Krishna says in the 14th chapter of the Gita, like three primary colors are mixed together and there are unlimited shades of color that come out of that. So everything in this world is like a painting from these three modes of material nature. And those who know the transcendental science of the Bhagavad Gita learn, as Krishna says, gives the metaphor in the Bhagavad Gita, in the so-called water of the material world without being affected or touched by it. He says, Brahmanyadaya karmani sangam tyakva karotiya lipyate nasapapena padma patram ivambasa. Just like a lotus that lives in the water but isn't touched by the water, it's not affected by it at all. Similarly, a person who knows the science of Krishna consciousness, able to live in the world without claiming oneself to be the owner of the world or the controller of it, is not affected by the three modes of material nature. And also, one who knows how to create an environment that is inherently transcendental, especially through sound vibration. For instance, people live in homes all over Silicon Valley. But if you go into any particular home, the mode of nature that it's affected by most prominently has to do with the kind of sound vibration that's inside the house. And who controls that? Well, the inhabitants generally do. In some countries, I've heard that they have a speaker system inside the house, like North Korea, and you get announcements and national music every once in a while. So, but here, we do have control. Of course, you may have to fight over it with the other inhabitants of the house. But that's the sum and substance of what creates a particular mode of nature, according to the Vedic wisdom, is the kind of sound vibration that you allow it in. So if one arranges one's living environment, at least, where you can control the sound vibration in such a way that there's a transcendental sound vibration generated, then the inhabitants of the home will be able to rise above the lower modes of material nature and not be captured by them. The ways in which we're captured by them is and affected by them is mentioned by Krishna in the Gita. For instance, if you're affected by the mode of ignorance or tamas, the lower mode, then you have no determination to do anything. You dream about doing things, but you don't do it. It's easier to space out, either through looking at screens, taking intoxication, and you had a lot of good ideas, but you had a lot of good ideas 20 years ago, but you never did anything about them. And have you ever known anybody like that? Has a lot of good ideas for somebody else, but not able to enact them, never able to engage. And of course, people also who want to move above that mode of lethargy induce the mode of passion into the environment. For instance, if you go into some workspaces here in Silicon Valley that are very progressive and they want everyone to work harder and be more creative and so forth, they'll put up posters about determination, hard work, and there'll be various slogans, and these are higher than the mode of ignorance, but they're meant to stimulate our sense of improvement, which is the mode of passion. I'm always thinking, how can I improve myself and become something better, get something better than I have now? And no matter what I have now is not good enough. In the mode of goodness, if one's able to rise to sattva-gun, this is a more fortunate mode, because from there one has some peace of mind and a sense of being beyond attaining something. As someone wrote to me recently, are you a human being or a human doing? Always considering yourself by what you've just done, but as the Bhagavad Gita indicates, you already are something. You don't have to become something. If you understand and see what you already are, you'll be fascinated by it, even by one glimpse that you exist, and you always existed, and you're eternal. This is a startling realization. And only this can only be seen from the mode of sattva-gun, as is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the mode of partivad dharano dumas tasmad agnis trayimayaha tamasastu rajastasmat sattvam yad brahmadarshanam, which gives the analogy of wood. There's raw wood, and then there's wood that's on fire, but it hasn't caught fire yet. It's just smoking. And then there's wood that's caught on fire, so there's smoke. So fire serves, but smoke disturbs. And fire, through fire, the verse points out, you can make a Vedic sacrifice through which you can attain higher destinations. There's so many things you can do with fire. But smoke, it looks like something's going to happen. In the material world, always looks like something's about to happen, but nothing ever does. Sometimes I get stuck on these airplanes that have these archaic contraptions on every seat. On the back of the seat, they have a little TV screen. Have you seen this? And then they have a slot so you can pay for watching something. But until you pay for it, it keeps running the same thing over and over again. They try to drive you crazy until you go, give me a credit card, I got to change the scene. It doesn't actually show anything, but for 6 hours it can keep showing the preview over and over again. So in the material world, there's a similar way in the mode of passion that I'm being promised something, but it never actually comes. It just disturbs my mind. And I don't actually come to the attainment of a sense of happiness, well-being, or attainment. But from the mode of goodness, sattvam yad brahmadarshanam, I can have a vision that I'm something beyond just the material body and mind, and I can feel satisfied. So one aspect of our spiritual practice is protection. You have to consider the fact that maya, the material energy, and the lower modes of material nature, you can think like this, they're opportunistic. So, for instance, if you're fortifying your, anywhere you go nowadays, especially in the city or anywhere else for that matter, you have to be a little careful. I know I see every once in a while in our neighborhood, somebody reports in through that system called Nextdoor. It's an internet program, and people say, you know, I left my car open, somebody opened the door, and they took my change out of the ashtray, and they also stole my computer, so I left the door open. So when we leave the door open also, if we're not careful, if we don't protect ourselves, if we leave gaps, then we can be exploited by the lower modes of material nature. So protection is one aspect of spiritual practice. Make sure that you protect yourself from being victimized by your lower nature, because it's there lurking, and at any time it can come up and grab you. So make protections in your life. And before I go into the next two, I'll take some reflections or questions. Yes. Is it cool enough here in here for all of you? What? You can have whatever you want.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. And especially I was seeing, you were mentioning that how mode of passion in corporates, like I remember that in most of the world we have written that don't encumber by the history, go out and do something wonderful. So they just promote, even in they have given us badge, everyone in the badge behind this is written, don't encumbered by history and do.
Don't be encumbered by history. Your history. Go out and do something wonderful.
Yeah. So yeah. I was just seeing that how that promote the passion and that passion you are telling.
Yeah, go out and do something. And there was an old saying when we were kids, don't just sit there, do something. But in this sense, for the idea of self-realization, it's don't just do something, sit there. See if you can sit there for a while and be present and understand that you're something higher. And can you sit there and chant? And actually, it's something Arjuna asked Krishna when he's asking about a person who's fixed in consciousness. One of the questions, how does he sit? And it's a big question, can you sit? Can you sit and just be there and, you know, repeat the mantra and listen to it? Or is there another voice from Rajagun that comes up and says, you got to get up now? It's like, why? It's like, because you got to do stuff. But I notice always when I'm at the airport, we're waiting in line for the plane to get on the plane, there's always a couple of people walking along, pacing back and forth, talking really loud on their phone like they're solving all the problems of the world. It's like, that guy's solving them too, you know? And I think of, you know, this idea that I have to, they're so serious. It's like, this is the end of the world. If this order doesn't come through, we're finished. And everyone feels like that in the mode of passion, that I have to do something right now to fix this. It's so important. But if you bring up, like, hey, check out this verse from Bhagavad Gita, get out of here! I don't have time for that. You know, mode of passion doesn't give us any room to think, even for a moment, to contemplate. Am I something else? Is there a hierarchy? Am I beyond all this movement? And am I okay if I don't just go out there and accomplish conquering the whole world? Am I still okay? Yes. What else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I like the moment about that this material world, it's like a painting. It's mixed with a mix of three gunas. So nothing new. It's just all the same.
That's right. And it's a reflection of the spiritual world. And what we see here on the reflected surface is nothing that we can keep permanently. It's constantly changing, ephemeral. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in a couple places, you should know that everything that you see is a manifestation of the modes of material nature, and that things are moving because of that also. So it helps us to have an objective view, to move beyond just identifying with the movie screen of the material world or the canvas. Thank you. Yes. 1, 2.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for the wonderful class. I really like the point where you mentioned that don't leave the door open, and if there are gaps, then the lower modes of material nature will step in. And I noticed that's, you know, if you leave your car door unlocked or if you leave things outside your home, then it's an invitation for the thieves to just come in.
Yeah, have you ever heard that little voice, you know, close that before you go, and they say, that's all right, and you come back. It's like, I should have listened to that little voice. Well, there's a big voice in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is saying, be careful. You're moving about a world that where the illusory energy, the lower modes, are opportunistic. And if you're not careful to close the gaps, then you'll be victimized. So take care. Be protected. 1, 2. Same point. Okay? Rasika Shiromani, and then we'll come up to Manjari Gopika.
I like the point where you said that if we act on our own intelligence without guidance, then there is no protection. Whereas if we act under a superior guidance, then we feel protected. This is so contrary to what they teach us outside, where they always teach us that you need to think on your own, you need to be independent. Like, that is considered as a virtue in the outside world, whereas that leaves us so vulnerable. That fact is, you know, not stated. Whereas in Bhagavad Gita, as you said, you know, we are being taught to take guidance. Guidance is so important. Otherwise, we get, you know, misled, and then that completely ruins our life, both materially and spiritually.
Yeah. Brahmanas, those who are progressive and evolved, are independently thoughtful. So, but what is that independent thoughtfulness? It's guided. It's not that one becomes dominated by a particular teaching, but one becomes, one understands the framework of the world and how to work within it properly through taking guidance from the scriptures, because there are many different decisions to make, And one goes back to triangulate through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. These three are infallible in helping us to move forward in the material world. Fact is, everybody's taking some guidance. It's just a matter of the quality of the guidance that we're taking. Where did it come from? So we accept there's axiomatic spiritual truth. And by taking that, then one will be properly guided. Nice point. Thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful class. I like the point about the I like the word deliberate spiritual intelligence and how we can steady our mind. And related to that, you also had mentioned, to this point, you had mentioned about having a strong morning program. How you can always delay and wake up late in the morning, but then when you have things are set, then the whole day you can deal with it.
You get 2 days in one when you get up early. And this is one of the practical ways that people who are interested in protecting themselves spiritually, they take advantage of the fact that when you get up early in the morning, then you have time where you're not disturbed as much by the modes of nature. It's a very calm time, especially before sunrise, at least an hour and a half before sunrise. You'll find that there's free nectar floating through the air that you can take. And the trick to getting up early is to go to bed early. Because if you try to rob yourself of sleep by staying up late, which is a product of our way of illuminating everything artificially through lights, it keeps the brain stimulated. In fact, I learned the other day, I was looking into sleep, because it's one of the important natural ways in which we repair ourselves. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, don't sleep too much and don't sleep too little. It's the yogic lifestyle to get enough sleep. And so I found out recently in an article about sleep that LED lights disturb your sleep. And when you're in a room that has an LED light shining, even if you don't notice it, it disturbs your brain. And so you should blacken your room. Cover all the LED lights with a lead sheath because they're buzzing through. So it's easy enough to stay up later and later and later looking at screens and lights are on and so forth. But yogis who go to bed earlier and wake up earlier get a lot more out of the day. And you can start the day in a very powerfully, spiritually enlivening way by deliberately getting up and starting your spiritual sound vibration as soon as you get up. Kratu Prabhu once told me, he tells all his students, the moment you wake up, you push the button and turn on a lecture so you can start hearing. You know, don't let there be any gap. And when you start like that, you get ahead in the day and you have some strength. This is deliberate spiritual intelligence. You do it deliberately. You can even set an alarm with mantra meditation, yes. There's unlimited ways technologically that you can surround yourself with transcendental sound. That's a good thing about technology. It can be utilized like that. Do you do that? Good. So as soon as the alarm goes off, you hear the Maha Mantra?
My alarm is the Maha Mantra.
Your alarm is the Maha Mantra. Okay, good.
Yeah, alarm is the Maha Mantra. So after that, I can't sleep because then I'll feel bad that I slept through Maha Mantra. So I have to get up.
Good. It's good to be inventive. Find ways. Shraddha, somebody from the internet?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, can you please comment about Atmana, the deliberate intelligence, from this verse in Vyavasatmika Buddhir, from Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, 241?
Speak about Atma?
Atmana, which is deliberate intelligence, from this verse, and the one that you're discussing today, and Vyavasatmika Buddhir, from 2.41 in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, deliberate.
Any relationship between the two, or is this Krishna's way of stating the same in different ways to reinforce a point? Thank you.
Which part in chapter 2? Oh, Vyavasayatmika Budhir Ekeha Kurunandana Pahushaka Hyanantascha Buddhayo Vyavasayinam. That if one doesn't have a fixed intelligence, then the intelligence becomes bahushaka, many branched, can go in various ways. So it's similar, because the idea of deliberate spiritual intelligence is that first you remove all your doubts. Lord Kapiladev tells his mother Devahuti in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that doubting is a function of the intelligence. And it's there so that we can triangulate and find the perfect balance and the source, perfect source of knowledge that we can be fixed on. And this is one of the symptoms of advancing in spiritual life. It's mentioned, it's called Shraddha. Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahe Surida Nishchoy Krishne Bhakti Koile Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. It means that our heart and mind is fixed on the fact that we're getting proper information and we have the perfect object of meditation. We have no doubt about it. But in the beginning, there may be various offerings for the mind and intelligence, and there may be doubts. What about this? Why not that? So in the beginning, one is meant in the process of spiritual life to remove those doubts. The spiritual master is supposed to help. Reading the scripture regularly will remove the doubts also. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and the association devotees removes those doubts. And when the doubts are gone, and Krishna says in the Gita that these doubts are like demons, they're obstacles that block our path, then without any hesitation, we can focus our minds. And so this means that in order to be deliberate, you have to deliberate. You have to take time to deliberate very carefully about what is reality and what is not reality. And the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. So we have to distinguish what's real and what's not real. And Krishna, in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, says, Shruti pratyaksham aityam anumanam chatushpadam pramaneshvanamastanad vikalpat savirajite. You should use four kinds of evidence to understand that this world is not substantial or permanent, and that you don't get to stay here, and it's not your home. Shruti, you should hear about it. Pratyaksha, you should see for yourself. Anuman means logical deduction, and aitya means through historical instances and wisdom that's passed down over the ages. And then he says, you should see for yourself using this kinds of evidence and be convinced that the material world is not stable, and therefore you should become unattached from the material world using those kinds of evidence. So once one has deliberated properly, one becomes very deliberate in applying oneself, and one's mind becomes fixed, that you know where to place your attention, which is really the most important thing that we do, is decide where to put our attention. In every given minute during the day, we have choices of where to put our attention, and unless we've deliberated carefully that it's vital we keep our attention on Krishna, then we can go in any number of directions. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I had a question. You said mode of goodness is a mode beyond any attainment, materially, of course. Although it's extremely very hard to be in that mode throughout our day, but even if we manage to be in that mode, even for 1 hour, how can we make the best use of that mode? And also, we are bound to fall to other modes, like mode of passion and mode of ignorance as well sometimes. How do I pull myself up from that mode? Because often it's very hard to pull ourselves up from mode of goodness to absolute, or just following Krishna or just chanting. But I can make the best use of mode of goodness while reading more, while chanting more, while getting up early. So if you could just tell us or tell me how can we make the best use of each mode. I can tell now which mode I am in, but it's hard to pull myself up from that mode, even if it's mode of goodness.
Even if you know, it's hard. Well, that brings to the second point. So first one was protection. We have to protect ourselves, be aware of the fact that we're vulnerable, and do what we can to organize our environment so that we don't get exploited by the lower modes of nature. That's number one. Fill all the gaps. Make sure you lock all the doors. Put a security camera up if you have to. The number two is training. Training is very important because whatever we train for, we'll be ready for. We'll be ready for various kinds of circumstances when we train for them. For instance, if you're going to give a talk or take a quiz and any test, if you just walk in at the last minute and sit down, maybe you'll sign your name on it and then look at all the, I don't understand this. It doesn't look familiar to me. Whereas if you've gone over and over the material so many times, you've actually tested before you've tested. You have five people give you the test and ask you the questions. What about this? What about that? When you walk in, you feel very confident. So in a similar way, as I mentioned in the very beginning, for instance, we have this community, and Srila Prabhupada started spiritual communities and a society, and in these centers, there's training. And the training shows us how to regulate our senses. For instance, it's natural for devotees who are part of ISKCON, before they eat, they offer food to Krishna. Becomes a natural part because we're trained like that. And nobody just grabs the bag off the shelf and crams their hand into it. It's like, what? You know, just start eating. Because they're used to, they become regulated through training that before you eat something, you offer it to Krishna. And so they make an offering. And then what happens when you do that? You're protected from the lower modes of material nature. Because the tongue's very demanding, and it can just say, well, if you're going to have that, you might as well have that too. And how about that over there? And you just, the tongue is the gateway to all the other senses. And it's one of the big openings. If you leave it open, the lower modes of nature will come in. And people eat all kinds of things. And Narottam Das Thakur says in one of his songs that the main quest of the living entities in lower modes of nature, millions of species, is to eat all kinds of crazy stuff. So devotees don't eat crazy stuff. They're trained to eat prasadam. And so even if it's a simple offering, they take that moment to connect with Krishna before they eat. This is an example of training. And everybody that comes to ISKCON knows that. So this is part of the spiritual training in life, is how to eat. And then there are various other ways that we're trained also, how to interact with other people carefully so we don't expose ourselves to unwanted association and so forth. So when we have that kind of training, then it helps us in times when we're challenged by the lower modes of material nature. When you're in a situation where you realize that you've been grabbed by the modes of nature and it's very difficult for you even to move your hands and legs to get out, you start with the smallest thing that you can possibly do, because Krishna is so powerful that if you just take the smallest dose of bhakti practice, devotional service practice, that he'll enter through that and he'll start to help you up. That's why in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, it's recommended by Sutta Goswami that in any circumstance of life, you take advantage of Krishna's names and call out to him, even in times of danger. And it is dangerous when we're captured by the lower modes of nature. And it's also important that the kind of sangha that we keep. And if we can get good association, even if we're in the doldrums, by getting higher association, somebody to come and rescue us, then will be okay. It's a good idea to invite people over to your place. Because when they come in, then you have to get everything ready. So if you're in Maya, then call up somebody and say, a devotee, and say, why don't you come over? And if you invite like a super sadhu over, you'll have to paint your house. And you see, when somebody, a very exalted person comes, you know, people, they steam wash their house and get everything ready. And then the sadhu comes, has lunch, goes away, and you go, hey, I'm okay now. So a sadhu sangha is very important. That's why Prabhupada made a society of devotees so we could have access to everybody and keep in touch. If you don't have that, at least Skype out and find somebody that you can talk to. Because just a short conversation with somebody who's in higher consciousness with you can affect you just as much as somebody who's in lower consciousness than you can affect you. So seek higher association and train when you can. Don't think summer all summer. Think winter all summer. Because know that there are harder times coming. And so try to take advantage of the times when you are in good consciousness to really train nicely, because it will give you momentum to protect you. So the trained intelligence Prabhupada talks about that the mind accepts and rejects. So the main point is train your mind to be attached to Krishna. This is the main point of Krishna consciousness. And the verse that Prabhupada commented on more than any other verse is 7.1 in the Bhagavad Gita. Mayasakta mana partha yogam yunjan marashaya asamshayam samagramam yata gyasasi tach trinu. Tach trinu means Krishna saying, just hear about me. There it is. Mayasakta mana partha yogam yunjan marashaya asamshayam samagramam yata gyasasi tach trinu. And the translation is, the Supreme Personality of God had said, now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. And the key words here, and Prabhupada emphasizes them again and again, is tat shrinu. Hear again and again about Krishna. And the stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Puranas are there specifically to transfer our intelligence from the material world to the spiritual world. And there are so many amazing pastimes and stories. And if one listens to them regularly, then the mind will gradually become attached to Krishna. And what's more, you'll also get spiritual knowledge, which Krishna certifies in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is something that's very sublime and pure, a transcendental knowledge. And it allows one to enjoy the self within oneself in due course of time by hearing transcendental knowledge. So invest in this. Invest in hearing. If you take time, especially in the early morning, to read your Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and Nectar Devotion, make yourself a nice feast. What if you took 15 minutes for each, or you budgeted into your time? This kind of a training of hearing is very powerful. And if you have other people living in the house, it's even better if you make an arrangement that at this time, let's hear, even if it's for 5 minutes, hear together. And then the whole household becomes transformed. That can be done. So this is the best training. The best training is to hear every day. And then take time to chant the Maha Mantra. If you chant the Maha Mantra every day and listen, then the mantra has its own power. It's transformational. It's called Nama Chintamani Krishnas. Just like these magical stones that can turn any ordinary metal into gold, similarly, the holy name can transform our intelligence into spiritual intelligence. So it's worthwhile taking time to chant and listen to the Maha Mantra. So today, just outside, we have a tent. In fact, I think I can see it from here. Is that it? That blue thing? That's the Mantra Meditation Club. anyone who wants to join the Mantra Meditation Club. Of course, we don't want to stampede back there. But if you'd like to join the Mantra Meditation Club, there'll be instructors within that tent starting at 5:30 all the way to 7. And you can go in there. They'll give you a guided meditation and teach you how to chant japa. And you can also sign up for the club. And then you'll have somebody to check in with to say how you're doing in your japa meditation and move forward. And this, if you take that home and you practice this at home, you'll become very strong spiritually by doing the Maha Mantra in your own place. So this practice of hearing, it's extremely important. Train the mind to be attached to Krishna. And the third is that Krishna says that one should become fixed in transcendental knowledge. So these are some symptoms I'm going to name where you can see for yourself that you're becoming fixed in transcendental knowledge. You'll have the power to control your speech. You don't just say any old thing, because the tongue naturally wants to say whatever it wants to say. What kinds of things does it say normally when it's uncontrolled? Yeah, it just it'll criticize others naturally. Gramya kata just means gossip. And gossip comes in many different packages nowadays. People, they have, if anybody has a TV, which I don't recommend, cut the cord. But if you do, you see there's all kinds of shows where they're presenting news. And on the news, you know, there's some really serious guy with a suit on and everything. They'll talk about, you know, who won the game and why the other person didn't win the game. And then they'll ask the athletes afterwards, you know, like, how excited were you to win the game? It's like, oh, I was very excited to win the game. And the guy who lost will say, how disappointed were you about losing? It's like, very disappointed. And it's like, the other guy, how did you win? It was like, we ran down and we put this thing, we put it in the hole. And, you know, that's how we did it. And we put it in more times than they did. This is news from the sports world, or if you like, you know, other kinds of sports. They get a ball and a bat and they smack it all over and grown men run after it. And this is a big thing. I mean, people follow it or kick a ball around, like kick it over a field and it has to be this size, not that size. It's all made up. It's a big waste of time, basically. Of course, sports are there. They go on in the spiritual world. Krishna, when he goes out with his friends to the forest, they play all day long. And the whole spiritual world is a big playground. Balaram creates it, so Krishna can play around unlimitedly. But the kind of sports in the material world where we have opportunity to elevate our consciousness are, for the most part, they're taken way too seriously, and it's a waste of time. And then you get the news of the world that comes in. You get too much news. We don't need to know all that. There's only so many tragedies that you can handle every day, and it doesn't need to be packaged in such a way to stimulate your mind. Then you add in advertisements where people are psychologically manipulating the mind to show you different things, like, you want this, you have to have it, or you'll die. And all these kinds of stimulations of the brain going on constantly are a detriment to one's being able to fix the mind deliberately on the higher self and actually experience something like satisfaction. There is no satisfaction in the titillation of the senses that goes on through this bombardment that happens constantly. And what happens when I take all that information in from the world, useless fragmented information with no connection to our original divine source, I'll sit down with a group of people, and it's like, what do you want to talk about? It's like, hey, did you hear about that guy? He crashed, his head got cut off. How's that going to help you in any way? These things are not consequential or helpful. So you have to control the tongue. And you'll notice when you start training yourself and protecting yourself from the lower modes of material nature that your tongue also will be restrained. And you won't speak Gramya Kata, and also you'll be able to resist the hardest thing of all, And that's criticizing other people. Because when there's envy in the heart and we see other people excelling, the natural tendency is to either criticize them or take away from their accomplishment. You can do that with damnation by faint praise. It's like, wow, that was amazing. Yeah, it was pretty good. The next thing you can tell if you're making advancement spiritually is that you have the power to be steady in your service or duty. No matter what happens, you're steady. And this is a sure sign of advancement because there's such thing as fair-weathered friends, and there can be fair-weathered devotional service too. I'll do it as long as it agrees with my sense of, like I'm getting something out of it, like I'm getting famous for it, or, it pleases my senses. But those who are steady in devotional service, and no matter what, they stick to it because they've deliberated on a much higher level, and they understand that this is what I do. I'm a servant, and so you'll notice when you're advancing spiritually that you don't give up your service no matter what happens. Especially chanting Hare Krishna, just because things aren't going your way doesn't mean you stop chanting, or because you don't like the way they're going, you quit your service. No, you keep going. This is a sign that you're advancing. Another is that you give up entitlement. Entitlement means because I've done service, I deserve a certain thing or two. Devotees who are advancing, they don't feel entitled, and they don't need to either because they feel directly how Krishna is nourishing them and supporting them at every minute. Those who advance also are ready to give heartfelt credit to others and appreciation for their service, because this is one of the symptoms that envy in the heart is subsiding and that a person is advancing spiritually, that the heart becomes more generous towards other people. There's a lot more room because that person feels satisfied and has spiritual integrity. He or she is free to give appreciation to other people's service and accomplishments. The other is a sense of happiness, that it feels satisfied, even despite the fact that the world's changing, there are various things may be wrong here and there, but there's a sense of joyfulness within the heart. This comes only from the spiritual platform. You can't get it anywhere else. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakangshati Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. Krishna describes how when one comes to the spiritual level, that there's a sense of joyfulness, happiness. I always notice with my friend Satyadev Prabhu, I always ask him, how are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm so happy. Any time, and it doesn't matter where we are, traveling, whether I talk to him on the phone, see him in California, he's in China, anytime. He's always happy because he spends so much time living on training and protecting himself from the lower modes of material nature. He feels happy. Similarly with so many spiritual practitioners who just stick to the process, you'll notice that they feel happy, joyful, and all the other symptoms you'll notice as well. Now, before I make the very last point, we'll just see if there's any reflections or questions. Yeah, Sundarananda Prabhu. He's back in quadrant two.
I like the point about how to train the mind to be with Krishna always. And also, I talked about the example of how the devotees are trained to eat prasadam, and that they perform this the yoga of the tongue, where they eat only prasadam. And the point that you made about how we can also have, of course, prasadam can be food made of roti, dal, chapati, but it can also be made of all the different books, actually, nectar of instruction. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and it can be a course of meal for the intellect and for the soul.
Read something nourishing every morning. Nourishes the mind and self. And when I first came in contact with Krishna consciousness, a friend of mine from school gave me a Bhagavad Gita. It was a tiny little Gita, about this big. I still have it on my shelf. My mom kept it. I didn't know it was still around, but when she passed away, I found it in her stuff. It was a friend of mine from high school, Martha Pollock. She signed it and gave it to me in 1972. I started reading that Bhagavad Gita, and even in that Gita, which was pretty much a Mayavadi Gita, but it had a section where Krishna says, you know, if you offer me love and devotion, a leaf or flower, fruit or water, I'll accept it. So just from hearing that, I thought, okay, that's a spiritual practice. So I started doing that. I didn't know exactly how to do it. I didn't know anything about deity worship or Pantrak Chikki Vidhi or anything like that. But I had this sense, you know, it's like, yeah, this apple, I'd offer it up. Actually, in between every bite, I'd offer it because I didn't know every spoonful I was offering. And so I had this sense. And then I was at my high school, Del Valle High School. It's not there anymore. It was during the baby boom. They built. It was like an artificial school that appeared and disappeared over by Rossmore in Walnut Creek. And then I was looking around. I said, I need a guru. I got to have a teacher. And so my brother was two classes above me, and I have friends from that. They said, go to Mr. King. He's the Spanish teacher here, and he's a Zen Buddhist master. So you go ask him. So after one class, I went in there and said, I want to know about spiritual life. Please, you teach me. You know. And he said, you have to come to my house, and I have a class for some of the students on Zen Buddhism. So a few days later, I went there to his place. It was on the way home. I used to walk to school, and I walked to his house. I got there before any of the other students, and he said, now we're going to have meditation today, so before you meditate, you take some bread and some peanut butter. And he started doing, and I started doing my thing to offer it. He goes, no, you don't offer, you just eat. And I said, no, I have to offer. It says in this book. And he goes, no, you just eat. And I said, I'm out of here. And I was walking down the driveway when all the other students were walking up. They said, where are you going? And it's like, see you later. And on the way home, I felt Krishna in my heart was going, yeah, you did the right thing. Just keep following the Bhagavad Gita. The reason I bring this story up is the fortification principle of the Gita. If you read the Gita, you know, Krishna gives you deliberate spiritual intelligence. I was rank neophyte. I didn't know what to do. I'd never talked to devotees before. I just read a few things in the Bhagavad Gita, but even that reached me on that level. Because Krishna's always there. This morning as I was chanting my japa in the garden, I saw a little hummingbird, and he was darting around. And I was like, how do you know where to go? You know, he just zeroes in on these flowers like a dive bomber. He goes, there's little flowers, I didn't even see him. And he goes, zoom, zoom, doo, 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 and he's off, you know. It's like, how do you do that? And then I was thinking, his brain is about that big. And I think, well, compared to Brahma, my brain's about that big. And how do I know how to do anything either? And I started feeling this sense of kind of oneness and how the super soul's everywhere. He's informing everyone at every second. And the main point is that you have to develop deliberate spiritual intelligence. If you hear the Bhagavad Gita regularly and you chant the spiritual mantra, then you start to notice that actually the intelligence is coming down from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very quickly it can happen for anybody if you read Bhagavad Gita. So if you don't read Bhagavad Gita and you don't chant, then you go off into the world and try to make it. Don't blame anybody else if things get complicated. Because the real solution is there to clarify the intelligence. Take help, and then you'll be okay. Was there another question or comment? Yes. Right. A question or comment before I make my last point.
So Maharaj, continuing on with the nourishment that you talked about, I was thinking about the comment at the back when Thoreau says that in the morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, in comparison with which our modern world and its literature seems puny and trivial.
It's a very nice quote, and if we have that sense of the power of Krishna's words, and it's another voice speaking to us, giving us guidance, coming from the Gita, then we'll keep that sense throughout the day and as we interact here and there. And it's palpable. Anyone can feel that. Okay, last section. Just about adaptability. It's one of the main ways that people remain progressive in their lives. In fact, in studies that have been done about longevity, the main quality that people who live for a long time, the main distinguishing quality they have is adaptability. There's no other, there are some other markers. Of course, if you smoke cigarettes, the insurance company will cut your life by on their charts by 20 years. And if you don't wear a safety belt, another 5 years, things like that. But the quality of adaptability is extremely powerful in one's life. And this is something that's a parallel with the things Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Learn to be adaptable. And when we're in spiritual consciousness, when we practice and when we protect ourselves from the lower modes of material nature, cultivate sattva-gun, then when we become fixed in consciousness, fixity doesn't mean brittle or inflexible. It means to be very flexible and very adaptable. Adaptable to what? The changes of life. Because these changes come to everybody regularly. We think we have something, we think we have a plan that's going to go in a certain way, and then it doesn't. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
It's a story of life. And there is no other. The changes come constantly to us, and we're not, if we are not fixed in spiritual consciousness, then will be very attached to the direction that it goes. However, somebody who's in spiritual consciousness, on the other hand, is adaptable to the point that whatever change comes, the person is trained and eager to find the lesson that comes from it and finds out what is the wisdom within the change. And also, for those who are even more advanced, when destiny calls, when the changes come, that person is actually hearing the voice of Krishna speaking to them in their life, that now is time to change. You see Maharaj Prakrit, when he was cursed to die, said, oh, that's Krishna directly speaking to me. So this kind of adaptability brings actual satisfaction, being flexible. And this can be attained by the spiritual practice and protection that we talked about earlier in the class. And if you have that, then you have the greatest asset that you can take with you wherever you go. That means acceptance of what's going on. Things are going to go on whether we like it or not. So if you learn to accept and see that this is what's happening and learn how to deal with it in the best way, then learn from the experience and learn to change your response rather than try to change your environment. Then you can improve. And lastly, take care of yourself when you have the opportunity, because big changes will come. And if you take care of yourself, body, mind, and soul, when you have the opportunity, then you'll be better prepared to take care and adapt when the changes come. So, protect, train, and stay fixed in spiritual consciousness. And Krishna says again, thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So you can get stronger. And it's worth it. In fact, it's the only thing that's worth it. Human life is meant to develop this spiritual strength. And we also have Balaram's appearance day coming up in 2 weeks. Isn't it? Yes. 25th, is it a Saturday?
Yes.
Just under 2 weeks. And Balaram is the source of spiritual strength. He gives all this wisdom as the spiritual master. And if we follow it, then right behind our intention to follow and our doing the best we can to follow, we'll get this invaluable spiritual strength. Gaur Premanande Haribol. So we have last chance for any reflection or questions. Yes, there's two in the back, starting with Kanka in the third quadrant.
Thank you, Maharaj. Wonderful class. Very inspiring. I like the one about you have to be flexible because change is going to come no matter what. And the other thing I really liked was cut your television cord.
Yeah. Just unplug it before you do. Thank you so much, Kanka. And Prabhu, you had a point.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. You mentioned many symptoms of spiritual advancement. A natural tendency in a neophyte devotee is that when he or she hears those symptoms, he or she tries to judge others instead of applying them to oneself. So how to avoid the tendency to judge others by knowing these symptoms?
Well, it's best to become spiritually advanced, because one of the symptoms of somebody who's spiritually advanced is they don't judge others. Neophytes tend to judge others, and they tend to criticize. It's in the beginning, we should follow the strictures given to us by the Shastra to not criticize others, even if we feel like doing it, we shouldn't. That's why when we talk about offenses in chanting Hare Krishna, we recite various strictures like don't criticize devotees. The devotees are ones who are distributing the holy name and Krishna really likes them, so you shouldn't criticize them. And so in the beginning we have to, by restraint and knowing the scriptures, be careful. So really we that's one of the reasons we create a society. And within the society, within the community, people are at different levels, and they may have different tendencies. So a community means that we have to be accommodating to all the different kinds of people and have ways that everybody can rise in due course of time. So we can tolerate various things, just like parents tolerate the fact that their children can't walk right away. They don't freak out. They know in due course of time they'll walk. So it's similarly, in this kind of organization, there are all different kinds of people. So those who are more advanced should try to give mercy and help others. It requires a lot of assistance and guidance to bring one person out of Maya. Maybe it requires maybe 100, 150 people to take care of one person. Because we all go through a lot, we all have a lot that we're carrying around in our hearts, so that's why we have this community. And here at ISV, we really, the main improvement that we like to see, that we work towards, is accommodating those of us who are already here, helping one another. And that also requires some tolerance, some understanding when people aren't on a similar level. I once asked Radhanath Maharaj how he created such a nice atmosphere in Chaupati, in his flagship temple there. And he said, if you want to bring forth a certain kind of important quality in a community, you have to emphasize it again and again. What, for those of you who are familiar with his community and the mood there, what one thing do you think he has emphasized more than anything else? Trinadapi Sunichena, being humble, again and 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 again, over and over and over, emphasizing. It becomes the main emphasis in an organization. And so it requires a lot of work. That's the answer for each one of us. And collectively, we all have to work together for those kinds of standards. but it's completely worth it. The Goshti Anandis, those who live together like we do all here, for the sake of expanding spiritual consciousness in ourselves and all over the world, we have to perform the austerity of living together. It's very difficult to cooperate with others. It's much easier to be in solitude, if you like that kind of stuff. I know I do. But I also love being with people too. But it is a challenge. And oftentimes when devotees come to me, and they do all the time, saying, you know, but he said this, she said that, and they did this, and they did that, and it's like, you know, doing your duty in the midst of all these kinds of things as a Goshi Nandi is harder than it is going to the Himalaya and sitting in that cold water in the winter, like yogis do, sit up to their neck, or hot fire in the summer. This is our austerity. And if you can learn to live with devotees and tolerate different things, be a little flexible, and encourage others to come up to a higher standard through training and association and so forth, then Krishna will be pleased. That was a really long answer to a simple question.
Jai Shri Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Can we attest our own level of spiritual enlightenment? Our own spiritual level. Is it possible to do that?
Yeah. Everybody has a certain level. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam to Uddhava, Sve Sve Adhikariya Nishta Saguna Parikirtita Viparya Tu Dosha Syad. That he said that you should act according to your adhikari, or your level of advancement. And by acting according to your level of advancement, then you'll move to a higher level. There's no limit to how much one can advance in Krishna consciousness. Did that come anywhere close to answering your question?
Can we assess ourselves as to what level we are in consciousness?
Yes.
Spiritual consciousness. Is it possible for a human being to do that?
Yes. In fact, that's why the Shastra gives us various symptoms. For instance, we can see Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when speaking about the advancement, the symptoms of advancement, tells Sanatana Goswami very practical things. One is that a person who's advancing spiritually is very loath to waste time, doesn't want to waste even a second outside of Krishna consciousness. So one can check that within oneself. How much am I interested in practicing Krishna consciousness, and how much am I interested in diverting my attention somewhere else? In the beginning, that equation may be there, but as we continue to advance, we can see for ourselves that I'm actually more interested in Krishna consciousness than anything else. So this example is given in the Bhagavatam also, that when you're hungry and you eat food, then you know for yourself that you're getting nourished, satisfied, and your hunger's going away. No one has to come and give you a certificate. You know that for yourself. Correct? Say yes. Yes. So in similar way, he said, when you advance spiritually, you'll also know for yourself. You'll feel it. You'll have more communion with Krishna, and you'll also feel uninterested in things that are not related to Krishna. This is a sure sign. Just like when you eat and somebody offers you more, you're not really interested in it. So you'll become filled up. Jagarini.
It reminds me of a class I heard recently. Srila Prabhupada was talking about the material world and how it feels. It's pinching us. He said, it's pinching. And you can tell how advanced you are in Krishna consciousness by the amount of pinching that you feel going on from the material world. An advanced devotee isn't bothered.
Yeah, that pinching comes from Rajagun. So Bhagavatam says, Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lobadayas chaye cheta itar anavidam stitam sattve prasiditi. When you start to become situated in sattva, which actually in this verse is describing spiritual, a spiritual state, not the sattva guna in the material world, then no longer are you pinched by the lower modes of material nature. Gopremanande
Nacharyar Marman Nacharyar Marman Nacharyar Marman Nacharyar Marman. Hey! Nacharyar Marman Nacharyar Marman Nacharyar Marman Nacharyar Marman.